Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Rob Cowell. He is the Chief Medical Officer for Medtronic, the Cardiac Rhythm Management Group, and also a cardiac electrophysiologist. Rob, thanks for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be on the program.
So for the benefit of the listeners, always good to know a little bit of the background. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you arrived at this role, and also as a little bit about electrophysiology and the work that you've done.
Great, no, thanks. So you know, I started my career as a pure basic scientist, but when I was going through medical school, fell in love with cardiac electrophysiology because it was one of those last places in medicine where the scientists were very closely linked to the proceduralists, and you and it was a small community where you really had that connection, and you could envision a whole boom ahead. So that's how I got into electrophysiology. I got to Medtronic through a couple routes. One, I was doing a lot of clinical research on new products, and often that was in conjunction with Medtronic as well as some other companies. In the hospital system, I was also trying to work on how we redefine care. So I was part of our accountable care organization at the Baylor Scott & White Healthcare System, and was also on the board of trustees of Heart Rhythm Society. And all those things came together so that when Medtronic had an opening as the chief medical officer of the Rhythm Group, they asked me to interview, and it was just the right time to extend reach and make a change and join, and I'm very glad I did.
Fantastic. So I got to say, as you know, casting my mind back to electrophysiology of my medical school, it had to be rarefied air for somebody to say they fell in love with it just because of the complexity. So huge admiration around that.
When I started the training, people referred to us as kind of the voodoo doctors.
Absolutely, they do. They still do in some respects.
There's something appealing about something that. Others don't quite get. But actually, you know, part of the challenge was to make electrophysiology more mainstream and take it from this rarefied air to something that had impact for a large number of people. And that's really the challenge of this.
Well, I just think it's great. I mean, I have to be honest, I was fascinated by it, but just very challenged because it was extraordinarily complex. And, you know, a lot of three-dimensional thinking, which is, you know, difficult for a world that, you know, whilst it's three-dimensional, we see everything in two dimensions, or at least we used to, not so much now. So tell us a little bit about Medtronic and, you know, the Cardiac Rhythm Management Group, so that we've got a little bit of context of what it is that you focus on and what you do.
So this was actually the foundational group of the company. So Earl Bakken was a medical electronics repair person and worked with C. Walton Lillehei at the University of Minnesota, who was one of the early transplant surgeons and congenital heart disease cardiac surgeons, and filled the need of a battery-powered temporary pacemaker that was externalized. That went to the first implantable commercialized pacemaker and went from there. And so, you know, that was a company of several people and a vision, and now it's a company of 80,000 with a whole spectrum of different medical products. But core to the mission is this cardiac rhythm division.
And that whole process of going from external to internal took place when? What sort of period was that?
Now we're talking the late 50s, so wow. You know, 60 plus years ago.
Fantastic. So as you think about the progress, and you know, you've obviously been involved in this for a long period of time, Were there any sort of periods or instances where you thought, wow, some significant inflection or change to the way that we approached those devices? Obviously, going inside the body was a big time. But, you know, there's been huge progress. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I think about it in two ways. There's inflection points of the technology and what we could do with it. And then there's the inflection points of how we interact with that technology. And they've run parallel tracks. So pacemakers themselves have gone from single wire, large devices to shrinking in size, to now having a second wire for a more physiologic setup, then to a third wire to create an ability to treat heart failure. Then they added the ability to undergo an MRI scan, which is a limitation for many of these patients. And then ultimately went to the biggest jump, which was several years ago when we went to a completely intracardiac leadless device. In other words, we shrank those devices by 93%. And therefore, a subgroup of patients, they can have a pacemaker that has no wires, no leads, no device under the skin. It's all in the heart. Then there's parallel devices, the defibrillators, which could not only pace the heart for a slow rhythm, but then if you had a life-threatening fast rhythm that would lead to a cardiac arrest, it could shock the heart. So think a device that is, the size of a half of a graham cracker, I'm trying to put it into a context, in dimension, is equivalent to having an ambulance there if you had a sudden cardiac arrest. So that's the device evolution. In parallel has been this ability to communicate with the devices. So initially, when you got a pacemaker in 1962, if you wanted the heart rate adjusted or something else adjusted, you had to actually stick a needle through the skin into an actuator and turn it and watch a monitor to get what you wanted. There have been small incremental changes to now we have the ability to communicate with these devices through smartphones. And in one of our devices, which is a diagnostic device called the Link implantable monitor, we can actually program that from the office via the phone to a patient wherever they are.
Wow. I got to be honest, I'm blown away by some of the capabilities. It sounds simple, but to make it MRI safe must have been a huge...
That was actually monumental work that Medtronic pioneered. It was probably a 8 to 10 year project. Wow. that came out about 7 to 10 years ago. It required the engineers to kind of think about everything that could possibly happen, including extremely rare events in the MRI environment, which is a pretty significant magnetic field, and really work through all these things and make sure that the engineering in the device reduced that risk to almost nothing. And they've been successful. And now we've gone from one pacemaker to an entire portfolio of products. So that are MRI, what we call conditional, meaning they're safe in the MRI environment. And that occurred very slowly at first, but once we got there, boy, that was the tipping point that allowed the rest of it to occur.
So, fantastic progress that I think, extraordinarily significant, long time to sort of see it. And you talk about some of those incremental improvements. From an external standpoint, you talk about the old traditional stick a needle in, essentially you say needle, but it sounded more like a screwdriver because we're adjusting.
A
needled screwdriver that was going in and you were doing it as if it was outside. Now it's remote capabilities. What does that mean? And even from the home, so that means that you're sitting at home.
Yeah.
You can engage and interact with those devices for the patient?
Yeah. So I think if you take a step back, what I think this is all about is whether it's the device progression or this communication, is this continual desire to look for the unmet need that is still there, even though you're making progress. And that's where the power of the team. The Medtronic team is always kind of looked for that unmet need, worked with physicians. That's how I originally got connected with Medtronic, was working on these unmet needs, make a change, and then don't stop. Find the next unmet need and don't stop. And so if we think about that programming and monitoring step, I think you could summarize this unmet need as, why does a patient with a pacemaker, an automated, pretty sophisticated device, have to come to the hospital every time they need something done. And I think that was the fundamental vision. And then these have all been steps to get to the idea that we need to bring care to the patient as opposed to their world, as opposed to making them come to our world for everything they need.
So that's fascinating progress. But as you think about the future, you know, you've obviously done this with devices that are implanted for cardiac monitoring, but there are so many other opportunities. And COVID-19 has accelerated all of this. We're moving more care, more activity, but we need more data. And, you know, we've got blood pressure cuffs, but that's a one-off. You've got to do it. Can we get to this 365, 24-hour-a-day data acquisition through devices and information that we get in the medical home?
Yeah, this is a great question. And it's kind of the classic adage of never let a crisis go to waste. And what I'd say is, while there has been a lot of interest in the power of remote monitoring, there until COVID-19, there was only so much progress that was being made in incorporating it because there wasn't that drive, that push. What we've seen with COVID-19 is two things. One, an absolute need to try to care for patients at the home environment, or better said, not in the hospital environment. But what that's also done is made people realize that things that seem kind of insurmountable and undoable were in fact maybe better. Some of the telehealth options, you miss the face-to-face, but you had greater connectivity in a more convenient time space. So with that now comes the desire to be able to recreate more of the hospital environment at home. And I think that's where devices that are implanted have a tremendous capability.
So for those of you just joining, I'm currently talking to Dr. Rob Cowell. He is the Chief Medical Officer for Medtronic, the Cardiac Rhythm Management Group. He's also a cardiac electrophysiologist. We were just talking about the sort of move and the shift to home. You've got these implantable devices. You've got remote monitoring. You know, one of the things that comes up all the time around this is the concern with, well, now you've got this remotely accessible device. How do you approach security and, you know, the concerns that, you know, some people have around, well, you can mess with this. What are you doing to sort of make sure that that doesn't happen?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And one that's kind of top of mind more recently. And I think the way I'd say it is, in the same way that we look at MRI capability or lead design, security is in the original configuration of the device. It is what we think about by design when the device is designed from its inception, as opposed to working backwards and adding it in. And that creates a lot of power. So when you look at our most current system where the device, a pacemaker or an ICD or a diagnostic device can interact through the telephone into the clinic, there is end-to-end security that's been built in. All that information is encrypted. None of your personal information is sitting on the phone where someone could steal it off the phone, if you will. And as we look at the next steps, remote programming, a new layer of security will be built into that. I think the other thing too, for people to understand is, without target on the back of the industry, if you will, we've seen an event where there's been kind of a hacking of a device. And the other thing that helps reduce some of that risk is we haven't built systems where you can communicate to huge numbers of devices with one click all at once. It's all a one-to-one interaction that for the most part still requires someone next to you or your device next to you to engage it. I had an interesting situation with a patient in her 20s who needed a pacemaker. That common for someone that young to need one, but she did, and she was passing out all the time, and it was debilitating to her life. She was a software security person, and her husband was a hardware security person, and they had this very concern. And they went back to the literature on how these communication protocols with the devices were designed. And she and I had a really great discussion with her, and it was very telling. And her view was, look, these are very safe devices. There is nothing that is perfect. But the risk to her was so small and so intangible from a security standpoint that she didn't want to not treat her very tangible disease and miss out on a chance of feeling better. And I think that was a very telling moment for me in how to think about this.
You know, it reminds me a lot of any time a lawyer walked into my consult room, you know, you have this sort of, whoa, you know, a little bit of nerve. And having the same with two security professionals, I think just, you know, fascinating insights and reconciling the sort of risk, as you rightly say, there is no perfect secure device. It's just impossible to create perfect security. And what we do is balance those risks. And it sounds like, you know, building it in, it's a fundamental component for this.
It's absolutely
extraordinarily important. And, you know, to the satisfaction, it's, you know, of two individuals that are really focused on it. I think that's a really compelling point around this. As we think about the future, there's a few things that sort of always occur to me. One is battery life. And that's one of the things that you mentioned as sort of innovation. You're managing to sort of extend the lives of these things. Where are we going? What scope of potential is there in terms of innovation that's coming around battery life, around other areas? You talked about three wires. Now I'm sort of thinking about more wires, you know, putting devices in multiple places. Do you think we're all going to have these devices in, even if we don't need them for cardiac rhythm?
Well, I think there are other places where there are dynamic communicating devices. Neurostimulation is one, but I think you've hit upon the work we think about. You know, battery life is going to continue to get better and allow for the two things that we've wanted to go after. One is the longevity, and more importantly, the miniaturization, because it's the miniaturization that that really allows for a seamless care for someone, so that they don't even know that device is there. That's the ultimate goal. But that continuous improvement of battery life is now going to take this remote monitoring platform in a new direction, I think. And that is that right now, for the most part, it's one-way communication. So the device talks through your phone to the clinic. It sends a ton of information, and we can talk about some specific examples of that. I think the future is now creating a bi-directional communication. The device might signal a patient, hey, something is, are you feeling okay? The patient can then add in some information, and that aggregated information can then go to the clinic to allow for a back and forth. And then, as I mentioned, our diagnostic devices can be remotely programmed. I think the next inflection point will be how to safely and effectively allow some of the more basic programming of a defibrillator or a pacemaker to be done, again, without having the patient come to our world with us going to their world.
So it feels a little bit more like, instead of reactive care, this is proactive care, where you start to engage with an individual who doesn't even know they have problems.
Exactly. So you know, when you think about the remote monitoring, we're doing two things. We're constantly monitoring the device's health. And fortunately now, that it's very rare for devices to have problems because of as I mentioned, 60 years of incremental steps in improvement, and then, you know, a couple big step functions to go leadless. The second thing is the ability to monitor the patient's status. And so, you know, we had a situation recently where a patient was mowing their lawn and felt pretty tired and fatigued, went in and sat on the couch in the living room, received a phone call a few minutes later from the clinic. Boy, you know, we got the message on our system that there is an issue with the pacing, and we need to increase your heart rate and check the lead. We want you to come in. Now, that's with this system, with the Bluetooth connectivity to the smartphone. If it had been a prior system That wouldn't have happened unless the patient called the clinic and alerted that something was wrong, or they went to their bedroom and lied down in bed, and then there was a connection with the bedside monitor. We have other situations where we can, the devices can see an impending, for example, heart failure episode in advance, so that a clinic can call a patient before they even have symptoms of the need to go to the hospital and assess the situation. And typically what happens in that phone call is it uncovers a pattern where the clinician can say, oh, that's a warning sign. We better take an action, change your medicine, change something you're doing to avoid an impending heart failure admission that, again, otherwise no one would have ever known about and would have resulted in someone coming to the emergency room.
So not only sort of proactive care, where you engage with somebody that maybe they know they have a problem, but they don't know the underlying cause, and you know, interacting and solving problems in the home, potentially. I mean, no requirement to come in, although I think in that instance they did, but in the future. But even more interesting, a predictive nature that says we can start to see what's going to happen based, I think, in part through all of the data that you're probably aggregating and, pulling together. So as we close out in the last couple of minutes, tell us where you see all of this going and where this future is coming up for patients.
So, I think this marriage of kind of raw technology innovation and this communication piece is going to continue to evolve. We're going to add in things like artificial intelligence. I know we use that term loosely, but the data you mentioned needs to be aggregated in a way that's actionable for people. But ultimately, it is going to be the continued movement towards moving care into the realm where the patient lives and keeping the patient away from kind of the brick and mortar of the hospital, unless they absolutely need to be. And I think what that will enable is this twofold potential reality where the patient not only doesn't have to come in and they can control their healthcare world where they are and gain all the insights they want, or even the exact opposite extreme, where we hear from patients who have the leadless pacemaker, hey, this is great, I feel better, call me in 10, 15 years when it needs to be changed, and otherwise, sayonara. And so I think really what we're talking about is returning ultimate control of care back to the patient.
Fantastic. Unfortunately, as usual, we've run out of time. So it just remains for me to thank you for joining me. I think fascinating insights, tremendous opportunity with the data, the technology, the incredible innovation that, you know, is just mind-blowing to me that we've gotten to this point. And, excited about the future. So thanks for joining me today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.